Session number 26984.
Frank House Reel 2. So how hard was the work there? Did you get time off, or were you working in shifts, or...?
We might have got a couple of evenings off a week, but we used to try and get a lift down with the Hawkinge pilots on the they had lorries that used to go by down this lane, which is called Crete Road, still there. And but we used to come back on the on a bus.
And you went into Folkestone, did you?
Yes, went into Folkestone always.
Yeah. And what was the entertainment there?
Yes, there was dancing. The entertainment was dancing on the right on the forefront. Actually, I forget the name of the hall it was called. Got a photograph of it, but. That was our favourite, certainly my favourite, to go dancing.
So not much time off, and the rest of the time you were just stayed by
yes,
the gun.
Yes, absolutely, yes.
You must have got very tired as the days went on.
Well, strangely enough, looking back, I often wonder, because I don't think, you see, I don't recall having a full night's sleep when things got busy, and they stayed busy right up till September, certainly. And of course there were guard duties as well to do, you know, the main gate.
How much of a beating did Hawkinge get? Did it get damaged?
They certainly got bombed at one stage. And I think, strictly speaking, I think we did a fair good job to defend Hawkinge. But they certainly had one raid there, as I remember. And we put up shrapnel then. And when they got a bit too close to us, the bombers, we used to put up the shrapnel. And I've heard recently that at a gathering there, quite recently, that someone said, "Yes, one of our Royal Marines attended there," and the RAF man said, "Yes, we know all about your shrapnel because it punctured the roof of the Nissen hut." And it rained that particular night, and we didn't go, didn't think too much of you.
Did you have much contact with the RAF personnel? Did you meet them socially, or...?
Yes, I used to like to get talking to them, but that was difficult because everybody was out to enjoy themselves. You know, they were getting on with the... We only had a few hours off, so that... and more often than not, the alarm used to go, and the pilots had to get in the lorries and hurtle back. Whereas we that were off duty, because somebody was deputising, perhaps we didn't have to rush back so quickly.
Is it the... pilots at Hawkinge, I mean, quite a lot were lost, weren't they?
Oh, yes. Of course, we used not to hear too much about that. We didn't get any communication about that. But it was one of the most marvellous things of the whole war that I still... Remember, I'm proud, very proud to have seen the Battle of Britain and those wonderful sergeant pilots and Cranwell fully trained pilots.
And they, you could actually watch the dogfights.
They
you?
Were magnificent, yes. I did see a pilot at one time just a short distance out to sea from Folkestone. He shot down three in a matter of 3 minutes.
Really?
Yeah, which was very unusual. He just...
What not was it? Was it his quickness in turning or firing? What was the secret, do you think?
Well, they got it. They of course, they were very outnumbered, and to start off with, they started to lose too many. And then they adopted the idea of waiting up above them at a great height in the sun, and then they dived down on them, dived down out of the sun, you see, and then they'd just do the business and shoot off as quickly as could. And that became very effective, especially these group of bombers coming in, a large group of bombers, to see these two or three, or perhaps more, fighters diving down, and usually very effectively. But there we are. Mm. Somebody had to suffer at the time, I suppose.
Yeah. So you must have been very good at identifying aircraft, different aircraft.
Yes, I used to pride myself, I was very quick at sighting them and being able to point them out to the gun and the predictor. There was a predictor gunnery officer commanding the whole show, of course.
Who was your officer?
Yes. No, I remember the initial Captain Rainey, who was at Yeovil, but we had these nicknames for them, you see. Remember one officer, we named him Dewdrop. I don't know why. So it's typical... ordinary ranks, you know.
Were they happy days? I know that's a funny thing to say, but when you were up at Folkestone...
We were like a big happy family, really. Mm. We were suffering, I dare say, hardships. I mean, the food wasn't all that to write home about. And sleep and accommodation, of course. But some or other, we felt that we were doing a good job. We were proud of what we were doing, young and foolish perhaps.
So you were there till December, right?
Yes, that's right. Yeah. And then we moved to Horndene in January 1941.
Right. Yeah.
we were then waiting embarkation, so that we'd heard that we were off abroad somewhere. But
did you have any idea where?
No idea. The only thing we were waiting. No, due for embarkation, because we knew we were going to a hotter climate, because we'd been to Portsmouth to draw our khaki drill. That's right, and pith helmets, which we thought were very smart.
So were you in a tented camp at Horndene, or...?
No, we were in a school opposite a pub called the Good Intent, which is very useful. But when the bombing raids used to go, were very bad at Portsmouth, we had to move out of the school and sleep where we could, anywhere to let the civilians take our beds. Yes, I always remember that. But that didn't happen too often. But
so they were evacuated from what's the nearest town? Is that Portsmouth?
Portsmouth, yes. Portsmouth and Southampton. Mm. They used, if the raids were too heavy, they used to come streaming along the roads, and the local councils had difficulty in accommodating them, you know. And they used to, people used to take them in, but if there was a flood of them, then we had to move out of our school and they took over our beds.
So these were quite tough days, weren't they? I mean, did you think the war was going really badly?
Yes, we begun to... I don't say we got demoralised at all, but we begun to get a bit concerned.
Because you'd heard all about Dunkirk, I suppose, and...
Yes, and yes, I actually saw the remnants from Dunkirk arrive on a train, and it was rather demoralising sight. Although, you see, being so young, we were not so easily demoralised as perhaps you do as you get up into. Or
what state were the men from Dunkirk in? Were they wounded or just...
Well, some of them were in their shirt sleeves, and yes, they were bandaged, and some of them were slightly wounded, but we didn't see any badly wounded. I only saw them on the railway station as they were being shipped off to somewhere.
So how long did you stay at Horndean?
Horndean? Until the beginning of February.
Oh, right, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And what happened then?
Then we went off then to Gourock in Scotland.
Yeah.
By train. Mm-hmm. And we boarded the RMS Rangitata.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Rangitata.
Yeah.
This is a New Zealand.
What sort of a ship was that then?
It was 30,000 tonner. Mm-hmm. And as far as I remember, over 3,000 of us got on board. Yes.
Was it chaotic or just crowded? Or?
We were pretty crowded, yeah.
What was the accommodation like? Was it adequate? Or?
It was hammocks, and and it was down below, these hammocks were very crowded, and of course, in the rough seas, when you're swinging about and bump. It was very difficult to sleep, so then some of us were clever enough, managed to get hold of what they termed as biscuits. And you had biscuits that were like a stuffed mattress, small stuffed mattress, piecing them together, probably get hold of a three, and you got on the top deck and sleep, providing the climate right. That was after we got sort of out towards Spain, once we passed Spain.
Yeah.
Then
so
you do that.
You must have been quite worried about the U-boats and things.
Yes, we had a pretty good escort, so we felt quite confident. We had these warships and destroyers. And in fact, I think our convoy was... at that time one of the largest to have been sent out from England, and we seemed to go via the North Sea, and we hit some very rough weather, and I saw waves then. I always thought they were about 60 foot high, but I think that's probably a little bit of exaggeration. But the ship, although being 30,000 tonner, was tossed about like a cork, really. In fact, me and my pal, we stood on deck and we thought we couldn't possibly survive this. It was something new to us, of course, but not to the normal merchant seamen and things, Royal Navy. However, when we got into warmer climes, it was very, very nice. But we took 3 months to get to Egypt, you see, because we stopped for a week in Freetown. That was due to U-boats being in the offing. And then we went down to South Africa and we stayed in Durban for a fortnight. Yes, the reason why we were shipped off there, because the Rangitata was ordered off to somewhere else. So we had to board another ship there to take us to Suez in Egypt.
Right. So quite a long journey, but eventually you got off at Suez, was it?
Or? Yes, and then we went up to a large tented camp known as El Tahag, T-A-H-A-G, which is near Ismailia.
And what was that like? I mean, you've been...
Yes. Well, as soon as we got there, of course, the officers thought the best thing to do is to get these chaps a bit of exercise. So we used to go off in marches into the desert. And
because you must have got quite unfit on the ship, really.
That's right, yes.
You've been very fit when you got on. But
that's right.
Yeah.
So we need a bit of toughening up and... So we used to go on these long marches and the first or second one we got lost. I always had a suspicion that somebody forgot the prismatic compass, but nevertheless you should be able to read the stars perhaps. And
you were out for a long time though, were you? Or?
Yes, well, we only had a pint of water, you see, and of course they were all told to, ration it as much as possible, but some of the boys, they just couldn't stop drinking it, and the pint was gone in the first few hours, and they had to suffer afterwards.
So how long were you out for that time?
We were out. The first trip, when we got lost, we were out for the whole day and the whole night, most of the night, didn't we? And
who was in charge of you?
Well, there was one officer and several NCOs, and that first night, I remember, we had a suspicion, the ordinary ranks, that we were something was a bit not quite correct. So I was sort of cajoled into sneaking up and trying to listen to the officers and sergeants having a little powwow. I got up there and I was immediately spotted and sent away. And then I got the idea that we were something, you know, not quite correct. We were perhaps lost our way. And I happened to notice a ring of stars on the horizon, what I thought was a ring of stars, a circle of stars going around. And being a countryman, I'd always study the heavens quite a bit. So anyway, I saw this little tiny ring of stars, and I mentioned it to the sergeant there right away, and he said, "All right, oh boy," he said, you go back and lie down, and you'll be better in a moment, perhaps a little later." And I was a bit shocked at this, and I did spot an officer and reported to him. And they looked into this ring of stars, and that was, sir, the point where we headed off. And when we got back to the camp, we found out that the Lieutenant Colonel had put a few ranks up on the top of a water tank with lanterns, and they just walked around.
Right. So that's what the Ring of Stars was.
Yeah, we were only about 20 miles away, you see, so but out in the desert.
What did you feel about your officers getting lost? I mean, were people quite sort of cross about it, really?
Well, I don't think we worried too much about that. We probably, we thought somebody would, what we use the term, get in the rattle about it, which is get admonished, and perhaps things will be tightened up a bit, which they did, actually. The next trip out, we went out with a major. He was a long service major, and we used to worship him a little bit. I had his name the other day. I can't remember his name offhand. Okay. But I remember we slept in the desert for the first time.
Yeah.
And not knowing the things that move about the desert at night. There's a little white snake that moves about, apparently, not counting the four-footed rat. They look like rats, you know. And early morning, there was a lone Arab was walking towards us, and the major immediately tried to shoo him off. And by shouting this yalla hempshire business. And the Arab insisted coming towards us. And the officer, of course, spoke Arabic. And as he got nearer, he could hear what he was trying to say. And what he was trying to say, that there was a couple of these white snakes moving towards us. And I remember the officer shot one of them, and I actually saw the snake. He shot it with his revolver. And so then this Arab was rewarded with a few hackers, and off he went. And sort of the major was that was quite something.
Yeah. So were you at El Tahague for long?
No, we weren't there for we moved off from we moved off in early May to Port Said.
Oh yes,
Port Said in Egypt, where we got aboard the City of Canterbury again.
Oh, again, yeah.
Yes, that's right. A busy ship, that City of Canterbury. Yeah. Her Majesty's Transport City Canterbury. Yes, we got aboard City of Canterbury, and we set sail. Got halfway across the Med and it broke down. I think it was broken down for at least 8 hours, if not more.
Because you were very vulnerable then.
Yes, we had two destroyers circling us the whole time, at great speed, I might say. They were circling us, guarding us. And then off we went again. And then before we got to Ceuta Bay, we were attacked by three Italian torpedo planes. And this is where Sergeant Harwood came into being. I remember being on guard, if you like, if that's a thing to say, but I was on duty at the time, and with my rifle and 50 rounds, we all were dished out with 50 rounds, and in a bandolier, and the alarm went, and over the intercom was an order, everyone with rifles, immediately up on upper deck. So off we went, and I would imagine there was quite a number of us, probably 20, 30. So, and Sergeant Harwood was there, in charge, conducting it all. And our job there was to fire at these, with our rifles, at this these planes that were coming in, which we did. And we actually, pretty certain, shot one down. And
they were machine gunning the boat, were they?
No, they were just dropping torpedoes. Actually, this first plane dropped two torpedoes, and I actually saw them. We had a marvellous skipper on board, and no doubt about it, he took a phase of action, and they just went by astern. I happened to be astern there and saw them looking over, a narrow miss. And the other two just veered off, and it was only the first one that put in the attack. The other two didn't press it home, and we sailed on, and
we came into Ceuta Bay, did
you? Yeah, came into Ceuta Bay, and the first thing we spotted was HMS York was grounded. Had been damaged and was grounded, put out of action. So that sort of caused a little bit of consternation. We thought, aye. Shall I go on?
Yes, well, we were stopped just there.